Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi-yo. Welcome to Kids Book Tales. My brother's name is Ollie and I'm Guy Boy. Thank you for listening from Mommy's podcast. See you later.
Welcome back to Kiwi Birth Tales. Thank you so much for being here. I am your host, Jordan. I'm a mum of two. I have Jai, who's 3.5, and Ali, who is almost 2 in about a month, which is crazy. Can't believe my baby's going to be 2. I also have a business baby, Your Birth Project, which is an online hypnobirthing course designed to help you create your best birth. So if you're pregnant, make sure you go and check that out. It's got everything you need to create your best birth, including a section for your birth partner. If they're not going to watch the whole course with you, then there is a specific section for them to learn all about birth and how to support you. So make sure you go and check that out. You can find it at yourbirthproject.com, or you can follow me on at KiwiBirthTales on Instagram or at yourbirthproject on Instagram to find out more. In today's episode, I am speaking with Heidi, and Heidi takes us through her 2 pregnancy and birth stories. They are totally different birth stories, but I'll let her share all of the details with you. I know that you've been waiting for an episode, so I won't take any longer. You can enjoy. Thanks again for choosing to have me in your ears. I'm super grateful every time you come back to the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast, and I hope you get what you're looking for. Okay, let's jump into the episode.
Hi, Heidi. Thanks so much for joining me on the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast today.
Hi, Jordan. Thank you for having me.
No worries. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about you and who is in your family?
Yeah, so I'm Heidi, and I have my partner Ben and our 2.5-year-old Albie and our newest arrival Felix, who is just 9 weeks old. Mm-hmm. And we are based in Puniki, Wellington. And I'm a winemaker and my partner's a brewer, and we also have a little wine label together.
Amazing. That is so interesting, Heidi. I don't think I've ever spoken to anyone who's a winemaker before. What is your wine brand?
So it's called Harlight Wines, and we make wine in Martinborough, which is very fun. Yeah.
Cool. Amazing. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing all about your pregnancy, birth, and motherhood journeys today. But why don't you start us off with so now you've got 2.5-year-old Albie. So talk us through the journey to pregnancy for you and Ben. What did that look like?
Yeah, so Ben and I aren't really planners. We had always discussed having kids, but it was always a in the future kind of discussion. So we got pregnant with Albie during lockdown. We had been kept apart for 5 weeks with wine harvest and him brewing. So when we reunited, it was a very glorious time. So it was very much a surprise with both boys, actually, but a very happy one. And yeah, we were pretty stoked.
Yeah, amazing. And how, if it was a surprise, did you have like a missed period? Were you on contraception? Like, what did all of that look like for you and finding out that you were pregnant?
I hadn't been on contraceptive for like 5 years because I just hate the hormones. But I just knew. It was really bizarre. I think I felt what was implantation. It was like a really weird sensation down in my uterus, I guess. And I thought it was bizarre, but it then kind of just brushed it off. And then I was a day late on my period, and I just knew straight away. I'm quite regular, so it was,
yeah,
it's kind of amazing how your body just tells you intuitively that something's different, something's changed.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And were you feeling like excited when you were taking a test, like when you got that positive result? How did you feel?
I was pretty terrified, to be honest. There was quite a lot of, I had to think about it quite a lot. There was a lot of mental load. Being a winemaker is quite a physical and time demanding job, so it's difficult to introduce a family into that dynamic as well. So that was sort of my immediate thoughts, was what's going to happen to my career, being career focused. But a lot of my friends and family have kids. I'm pretty familiar with that sort of concept, so I was excited. I was sort of more nervous to talk to Ben about it, actually, but he was pretty cool about it. I guess it just meant there was going to be a lot of change, and we didn't really know what that change was.
When you say, like, the mental load, I guess, that you bear when you find out that you're pregnant and how that might change things for you from a career perspective, do you feel like that was something that you came to terms with, like, through your pregnancy? Or how did you sort of, I guess, come around to the fact that, like, that would maybe change things for you, and what did that look like for you in the early stages of pregnancy?
Yeah, I think I was always realistic that I probably wouldn't be able to go back to my job. I was commuting to Martinborough every day from Wellington, so that in itself was just not really feasible with a baby, or not fair, I think. So I think I really worked through that a lot in my first trimester, which is so difficult because you're working through so much on your own in that first trimester as it is. Yeah. But then I sort of remained optimistic that maybe I could find a way that it could work, potentially moving to Martinborough. You know, there were different options or opportunities. But at the end of the day, when I thought about it, vintage is like it's a 3-month sort of period from like March, where you pick the grapes, and it's quite a demanding time. It's, you know, if you're working for a smaller place, it could be, you know, 12 to 16 hours a day, 7 days a week for that whole time, you know. So it's doesn't really work with the family life. So I remained optimistic, and I had definitely planned on returning after maternity leave, but when push came to the shove and I had my baby, that became my priority, and I didn't really care about anything else. I guess what I did after I had Albie is I did start my own label, and that was my way to get my creative outlet and my challenge and stimulation. Without having to sacrifice family time. So that was really great, and I was so pleased that I had done that. It was quite scary in the initial stages of figuring it out, but really wonderful.
Cool. And talk us through, from a first trimester perspective, how were you feeling physically? Did you have any pregnancy symptoms or anything like that sort of pop up? And did you decide to go with a midwife for your care, or what were your options there?
So first trimester was pretty typical, just some nausea and tiredness, but all in all, I think I kind of escaped pretty light-handed. I couldn't get a midwife, and I was really devastated about that. So I was due on the 8th of January, which is a really tricky time of the year. That's when everyone's having holidays. So I went through the community midwives at the hospital in Lower Hutt. And that actually worked out to be pretty good. Everyone was super kind, and I just went to the hospital for my antenatal appointments. I was feeling good throughout my pregnancy. I just had to mostly come to terms with the fact that I didn't have a midwife or that coach or support person that I could just call upon, which, it was hard, but so be it. It is what it is. So I'm such a shortage of midwives, so it's super common that this is what people are doing now. So I'm really grateful for those midwives at the hospital.
And with the community midwives, like, just for someone who maybe hasn't heard of that before, do you, like, go to hospital and you see the same one at the hospital every time? Do you see, like, a different one every time? How does it work from a care perspective?
So you just see whoever is available at the time. You book the appointments a month in advance. Sometimes you get the same person, sometimes you don't, depending on the day. But it's kind of a nice thing because then you're really familiar with a lot of the stuff. So when it comes to actually the birth and that postnatal time in hospital, you're quite comfortable with the environment and the people that are there.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Awesome. And from a, I guess, like birth plan or knowledge about birth perspective, did you do antenatal or anything like that through the hospital or through anywhere else?
Yeah, I did some antenatal and I did the Your Birth Project.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and just listened to quite a lot of podcasts. But that's sort of all the birth education I did, which at the time seemed like it would be enough.
Yeah.
But you just never know with your first time exactly what to expect and how to best prepare. And so you do all you can.
For sure. Yeah. Awesome. And did you find out the sex of your baby in your pregnancy?
Mm-hmm. We did both times around. I felt that I could bond better when I knew I could visualize sort of like what was in my tummy, you know, it's a girl or boy. So we did find out, and they also at that anatomy scan found that I had marginal cord insertion, which for your listeners who don't know what that is, it's where the umbilical cord attaches to the side of the placenta. So the risk there is that there could be potential slow growth because they might not be getting the right amount of blood flow.
Yeah.
So because of that, I had to get growth scans every month. And when it came to labor, I was going to have to go on continuous monitoring.
And were you like worried about finding out about that? Like, how did you feel, I guess, at that stage in your pregnancy, knowing that like you'd need continuous monitoring when it comes to labor and also just like a small complication within your pregnancy?
Yeah, I was actually really devastated about it. I felt like maybe the way the news was delivered wasn't as sensitive as maybe it should have been, just because it's probably something that's quite common and they deal with all the time and it actually isn't that risky. I did feel really concerned that there was something wrong with my little baby, or maybe I'd done something, or but all in all it was actually fine. The growth scans were all good, and he was measuring quite big the whole way along, so there was nothing to worry about in the end.
Awesome. And had you picked a name out in pregnancy, or was that something that you waited until he was born for?
We really struggled with the names. We had a list. Well, we sort of had a list. We each had a name that we really wanted but couldn't convince the other person of it. So we didn't end up naming Albie until a week after, but Albie was always on the list of names that we both liked.
Oh, it's so hard naming a baby, right? Particularly when like you and your partner are going to have different views of what's a good name.
Yeah, totally.
Awesome. And talk us through, I guess, the sort of third trimester and end into the end of your pregnancy. How were you feeling? Were you having regular or more regular checkups because of your marginal cord insertion? Talk us through, what did the end of your pregnancy look like?
I really loved the third trimester in both pregnancies, actually, and all the movements and just feeling really, I don't know, just at peace with the whole thing. So I had a really good time. I was still working in the winery, doing probably some physical things that I shouldn't have been doing. But no, it was a good time. So monthly growth scans, which was great because it meant I got to see my baby every month, and just the standard monthly antenatal checkups at the hospital.
Awesome. Cool. And talk us through your plan for birth. Like, did you have a birth plan? Did you have ideas around how you wanted your birth to go? What did all of that look like for you?
I spent a lot of time working on feeling positive with any outcome. Just knowing that birth is such an unpredictable beast, and the fact that I was in hospital, I didn't have a midwife. So I was kind of just working on any outcome. Ideally, I wanted to have a natural vaginal birth with no interventions. That was the goal.
Awesome. Cool. And take us through how that all played out. So take us through your labor and birth story. I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, so my waters broke at 39 weeks, which happened to be New Year's Eve. It's a great time for it to all go down. I had the yeah. Hollywood gush of waters, and it was at like 2 a.m. so I had to try and talk myself into getting some sleep before anything happened, which was really difficult because you're so excited. And then we went to the hospital in the morning just to have a checkup, and everything was all good. And around 2 p.m., I think I started getting contractions that ramped up quite quickly, actually. And by 4 o'clock, 2 hours later, I was sort of struggling through it. So Ben decided it was time to go to the hospital. And when we arrived, I was already 5 centimeters dilated. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so the active phase was going quite quickly, which I was pleased about, but I still had no idea for how long I was going to go through those contractions or, what was going to happen. So I really did battle through it. I think instead of breathing through my contractions, I was kind of fighting them. Yeah. Which actually made it quite painful. And so by about 7 p.m. I think I asked for an epidural, and I remember at the time of asking, I was sort of shouting in my head for someone to tell me no, like, you can do it, you're doing great, we'll push through, but no one did, so and that's fine. I asked for it, and it was a godsend. It just took away all the pain, and it was really great and purposeful for that time.
Do you feel like you said you were sort of fighting through the contractions rather than breathing through them? Do you feel like it was because like being your first birth, the contractions were like so different to what you had anticipated, or did you just feel like the breathing sort of went out the window when things got a little bit more intense? Or I guess what did you feel at that time, if you remember, pre asking for an epidural?
Yeah, definitely breathing went out the window, and that was the main thing, because with that breath, you're really fighting your body on its natural progress. So it made it feel really painful for me. And also, again, just not knowing what to expect or how much more intense it was going to get. I think the epidural was definitely the right choice. I just wasn't coping. But that then slowed everything down. I was fully dilated quite quickly afterward, but the contractions slowed. So then they had to put Syntocin. They put it through the drip just to try and bring the contractions on again. But I couldn't feel anything. So the epidural had worked super well. But I was kind of devo about that, because I wanted to feel that sensation of pushing as well. They told me that I could start pushing. So I pushed for 2 hours, and baby's head was just kind of going up and down, and nothing was really happening. So they got a obstetrician in who said that I was going to need an episiotomy, and gave me the option, did I want forceps or ventouse? And I had done a bit of research on that and just had decided myself that I was going to go the forcep route. So they did that, and baby was born maybe like 5 minutes later and put onto my chest, and it was just the best feeling. Just the relief of him being here and everything's okay and we did it, and it was really great.
Amazing. And before we sort of talk through what happened next, did they give you the option to try and push with your episiotomy and not have forceps or ventouse, or you just didn't have the choice?
No, it seemed like the episiotomy was not negotiable. I mean, I could be wrong. This is sort of going back. But what was interesting is that after he was born, they realized that the catheter had fallen out, and so my bladder was really full, so I wasn't able to push his head past my bladder.
Right. Okay.
So that probably impacted. I felt like all the hospital staff were really good at giving me my options and allowing me time to sort of work through them and giving me any information that I needed. So all credit to them. I mean, I feel like I did have that cascade of intervention, but it was all my decision and my choice. So
cool. And you've got your little boy on your chest. How were you feeling in the next little while? Did you have like a managed third stage to birth the placenta, or what was your options there? And then, talk us through what happened next.
Yeah, with the marginal cord insertion, they were pretty keen to just get that out. I'm not sure if there was a risk of hemorrhaging because of that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But they gave me the injection and the placenta was out in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Again, I couldn't feel anything. So it felt super easy. Yeah.
I know the feeling of the epidural. You're like, oh my gosh, this is like my world's change.
Yeah. That instant relief was pretty incredible. But I mean, if I could go back in time and change it, I would have for sure.
And when you, like, they obviously would have had to stitch you up from your episiotomy, so did you feel any of that, or you were still completely numb from your epidural?
No, I didn't feel any of it. It was great. I mean, I certainly felt it the days afterward. But the first few hours after birth were really great. We just got to hang out with our little boy and we were undisturbed, and it was really lovely. I think we caught up on like a little bit of shut eye and had the toast and Milo situation, which I was very excited for.
Amazing. And did Albie latch on initially, like, and when you first sort of had it?
No, the first few days were kind of tricky with latching, just being such a new thing. I didn't really know what was going on, and it's a new skill for the baby as well, so that took a couple of days to get a handle on. But then once we figured it out, he was an absolute champ, and we had a really incredible breastfeeding journey, actually. Like, I never got some nipples with him. The whole thing was just really great, which I'm super thankful for, because it was one of the things I was most nervous about with having a baby, is the breastfeeding.
Yeah, awesome. And did they give you like a lot of help in the hospital to get him latched correctly, or what did that look like?
Yeah, it was kind of hard because every midwife had their own thought process around how it should go. So I ended up being a bit confused. And they were quite keen to do a lot of syringe feeding. So it was interesting. Definitely had lots of support from people, but it was kind of conflicting as well.
I think I hear that really often through the podcast, like every midwife that you see has a different view of breastfeeding or how to do it and what to do, and sort of all of those things. So I'm really pleased to hear that you ended up with a positive journey in the end, and we'll sort of talk through that a little bit more. But before we do, how long did you stay in the hospital for? What did it look like? Did you go to the birth center or did you go home? Did you have an option for the birth center? What were your sort of plans and how did that play out?
So I stayed in hospital for 2 nights, I think. They offered me to stay another night, which was really generous, but I was quite eager to get home. I couldn't go to the birth center because I didn't have a midwife. That was going to be the number one goal. But then that birth center ended up closing down shortly afterwards as well, which is super sad. I was in the hospital, and then I had a postnatal midwife, and I got to have the same one throughout that 6-week care, which was really cool.
Awesome. That's lovely. And how did you find taking Albie home? You're a new mum. You've just had like a pretty intense birth, right? Like recovering from an episiotomy and sort of birth with forceps is a lot. So how did you find like your physical recovery while caring for your baby and trying to care for yourself? And what did that first sort of week or two look like?
Yeah, you don't really think about the postpartum part so much, eh?
It was
quite a hectic recovery, actually. The episiotomy stitches and the pelvic floor damage were quite painful, quite sore.
Yeah.
I didn't actually recognize the pelvic floor damage until about a year later. I didn't know what it was. Or how to like explain the sensations that I was getting, but anyway, super interesting. Yes. So the 3-day baby blues, lots of tears of joy. It was a very emotional time, but in a really happy way. But yeah, there's a big shift that happens to you once you have a baby, and it's that support. You need to surround yourself with that village, which I had, so I was really grateful for that. A lot changes. I mean, you're recovering from birth, but then, you know, you've changed as a person. Everything seems to have changed. And you're learning how to feed. You almost feel in disbelief that you've been allowed to take this baby home by yourself without any training.
Yeah, it's like you get training for literally like everything else in your life, right? And then you've just got this newborn baby to take care of, and there's no handbook.
There isn't, but it's amazing how much of it is really intuitive. I mean, a newborn just sort of eats and sleeps mostly. Yeah. So that was good. Mm-hmm. And Albie, I don't know if it was the epidural or what it was, but he was a really chill sleepy baby. Like he just slept I think for the first 6 weeks and basically didn't make a peep, so we were having to wake him for all of his feeds for quite a long time.
Awesome. And how did you find like the shift, I guess, in your relationship bringing in a new baby? Like it's so different, right? You go from just only ever being you and your partner, and then all of a sudden your entire world shifts to this baby that you've got that's yours to look after. So how did you find, the sort of relationship shift, and how did you manage like the sharing of the load, and was your partner still working? What did that look like?
Yeah. I think we were both hyper aware of that shift that happens when you become parents. So we really focused on our communication and just trying to be open and honest with each other and how we felt, because a lot does change and you forget to have time for each other, and you can build resentment for the other person going to work and nothing really changing in their life. And we're quite good at checking in with our emotions and mental well-being. It does take a bit of work and we're not perfect, we really did dedicate as much time as we could to checking in with each other and just working through that. But it wasn't for quite a while before we could actually really spend any time with each other. Everything was sort of baby focus, which is normal. Ben took a week off and his mum came down for a week, and then he was back to work, and his commute is quite painful and long, so sometimes he wouldn't get home until like 6:37, which I would find quite hard and lonely. But again, it was just about discussing that and trying to work through it.
Awesome. And you talked a little bit earlier about a year down the track sort of experiencing some pelvic floor issues, so talk us through, I guess, your recovery sort of longer term and what was going on that made you think that there might be something else happening.
Well, I didn't really put two and two together. So I was getting the pelvic floor pain pretty much straight away after birth. But again, just with so much going on down there, I didn't really recognize that it was my pelvic floor. And I got my period back 11 months after birth, and I use a menstrual cup. I found that it would be really painful, and again didn't put two and two together. I actually contacted the cup manufacturer and I was like, hey, like, I've had a baby, this, like, this is really uncomfortable, do you have any clue as to what could be going on? And they thought that maybe the cup was touching my cervix and that was creating a pain. I don't really know how to describe the pain. It was just, it was very like tight and uncomfortable, and I couldn't stand for periods of time. And again, I did nothing about it until I was pregnant with Felix. So I kind of just pursued through it, which is really silly. But I think pelvic floor physios are really expensive.
And it was quite
difficult to find a time where I could actually go to one. Which is silly, like, we need to prioritize our own health, but I didn't. I just slipped through the cracks.
I mean, it's easy to do when you've got a baby, right?
it's great that ACC is now funding things like that for any kind of birth injuries. But I did end up seeing a pelvic floor physio when I was pregnant with Felix, and she just helped me work through some of those injuries and help better prepare me for my next birth.
Awesome. And did you find her through, like, your midwife connecting you with a pelvic floor physio when you were pregnant, or what was the, like, prompt that made you go and see a pelvic floor physio?
It was something that I had been meaning to do for like 2 years, and my midwife passed on a name that she really highly rated, so I was like, yeah, I'm actually gonna do it, I'm gonna put in the work, because I didn't want to go through that again. I mean, I was still experienced right up to that pregnancy, I was still experiencing pain every time.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I would get my period and have to use the cup, but then I didn't want to use anything else, so
okay so you've obviously fallen pregnant again. So talk us through that sort of next pregnancy. Did you always want to have more than one baby? What did that look like? And then through to finding out that you were pregnant.
We knew we were going to have two, and I think we had decided like a 3-year age gap would work for us. I don't know why we thought that. I mean, you're sort of given what you're given and you work through whatever, but that sounded like a good plan. But again, we don't really plan very well. So in between that time, I released Highlight, which was really exciting. And that was kind of our focus and our little, little other baby, I guess. But the day we released it, we had a bit of a party. And we conceived young Felix, so there tends to be a bit of a theme going on. I don't think we should party together anymore, but so that happened, and again I knew straight away. I think I might have known even before I had missed my period. Just that instinctive feeling of something going on in your body. And Albie was, I think he was about 18 months at the time, so we figured it out. It was going to be about a 2.5-year age gap, which was great, so we were really stoked. I was very surprised. Ben was very happy. It was cool that time. I got him to read the pregnancy test and tell me what it had said.
Awesome. And maybe we'll just jump back really quickly before we talk through this pregnancy. So you started your wine label after having Albie. how did that come about, like with a baby at home, and how did you sort of juggle that, you know, or everything that goes into your own business and like your own label and all of that sort of stuff? Talk us through how that all worked.
Yeah, so my maternity leave came to an end, and I had to admit to myself that I wasn't going to be able to return to work, and I was really sad about that, but I was also, I was happy and at peace with it, because I was just so in love with being a mum and having my baby that I was really quite satisfied with it. But probably a year down the track, I started missing wine quite a lot, and although you know, still surround myself in wine, I did feel like something was missing. And so we had talked about starting a label for years anyway, and it was just getting the confidence to actually go ahead and do it. And I had enough connections and could figure out the plan. I mean, making the wine is the easy part for me. It's all the business side that I really have no idea about. So we decided to do that, and almost instantly I felt like I just had myself back. That part of me I didn't even know was missing until I had really started that and ignited that again. So it all, there was quite a lot of planning involved, but you know, you just make things work. When you really want them to. So releasing the wine and selling the wine was really wonderful, and then finding out I was pregnant again straight away. I did struggle with it a bit more than I thought I would have. When I was pregnant with Albie, I was still working in a winery, so I was surrounded by it every day, so I didn't really feel like I missed anything. But this time around, I had to really kind of cold turkey out of the whole wine game. I mean, for the first trimester, I was pretty nauseous anyway, and I didn't really want to take part of it. But it was quite a hard thing to have to let go of, I guess, for a bit. I mean, I sold out of wine in 2 months, so it was kind of easy in that respect. But yeah, I did really miss it. And I did find it a bit hard. I'm quite good at checking in with my mental well-being, and I don't, I never struggled in that sense, but I did notice that it was missing from my life.
I think there'll probably be a lot of people who relate to that sort of feeling if a career has been something that's important to them, like pre-children, I think. A lot of people, and this is a generalization, I'm sure there are a lot of people who don't, but sort of feel that sense of like it might have been your purpose beforehand. And I think once you have kids, like that might shift, but there'll always be that sort of piece of you in that way. So yeah, it's really interesting to hear your journey and how it's all played out.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess being an alcohol industry as well, just as a disclaimer, we're trained to spit the wine, so I wouldn't be drinking it all anyway. But there's an added complexity there as well, so I had to remove myself from even being in that, like, part of that culture or industry at all. I couldn't just go to wine events and show face and be the brand and do stuff like that, because
awesome.
Anyway,
cool. So talk us through your first trimester and your second pregnancy. How were you feeling? Did you have any trouble finding a midwife this time? Like, what did all of that look like for you?
Oh yeah, so I got onto the Find My Midwife page so quick. determined not to miss out this time. That was the first thing I did, and I hadn't even decided how I wanted to give birth at that stage, but something drew me to my midwife Susie, and I contacted her, and she called me I think that day, and we had a brief chat, and I was sold on home birth so quick. I was like, yeah, this is, you're my girl, this is what we're doing, like, let's go. So I think I knew I wanted a home birth, but I was very open-minded toward whatever.
So got
her on board, and first trimester was pretty good. I again nauseous and tiredness, and you've got a toddler as well, so that's fun. I was also working part-time at that stage as well. I got big quite quickly, so by about 7 weeks I had to buy stretchy pants. So I found it quite hard to hide from people, so I actually told everyone quite early on in this pregnancy, which made it seem like the pregnancy went for about a year.
I know that feeling.
No, but the first trimester was all good. It wasn't until about 16 weeks, I think, that I got vulva varicosa, like, really aggressively. I also got spider veins down my leg, so it hurt to stand. Everything was really swollen, and I was kind of thinking in my head, oh, my God, am I going to have to give up work already? Like, it was pretty horrendous. But I got on to compression tights and just everything I could. I mean, they definitely got worse as I got bigger, but maybe I was able to deal with those things a bit more.
Yeah. Was your midwife giving you guidance on how to, like, manage them, or where were you finding your information?
Yeah, totally. So I think that might have been how we got on to the pelvic floor physio, because that can actually help with the varicose veins and stuff like that. So she was definitely giving me a lot of guidance around, like, acupuncture and compression tights and pelvic floor exercises. So I did all those things, and they must have helped. I then got a bit of, like, pelvic instability as well. It's amazing how second time round, or, like, any consecutive pregnancies, your body is just, it's a battle.
And how did you feel sort of moving through your pregnancy about your previous birth? And did you have, like, you know, a view on, like, I know you said you were pretty convinced on home birth sort of from the get-go, but did you have a view on how you wanted that to play out? Were you doing anything differently from an education perspective? Talk us through all of your birth plans and dreams and hopes.
Oh, I went fully deep. I went into it. Became a little bit obsessed, actually. I think you do reflect on your previous birth quite a bit once you become pregnant again. I don't know if I had really given it a lot of thought. Like, I was just happy that I had my baby, and whatever happened, and that was fine. But upon reflection, I had felt like I had failed, which I know is really silly, but that's just a personal thing for me, because I just wanted to do it and I couldn't do it. So, I put in a lot of work second pregnancy to work through that. So I was deep in books, podcasts. I was doing all the pelvic floor exercises, yoga, meditations. I just became a little bit obsessed about it, actually, and I still am. Birth is so cool. the more I read and the more I educated myself, it really just solidified that home birth was for me. And I was so excited to get to that point in the pregnancy to actually do it.
And talk us through, like, your preparation for a home birth. What did that look like around, you know, what did you need? What was your midwife sort of telling you to do? Did you want to do, like, a home birth with a pool, or how did that all play out?
So I hired a pool and a TENS machine, the glorified TENS machine. So great. I learned a lot through all of the podcasts, I'd say, more than anything, just other women sharing their experiences of what worked for them and managing their contractions. So I really had this really big toolkit, I guess you could say,
of awesome
management techniques. So the pool was part of that, the TENS machine, the meditations, and I just knew that I had to get into a zone and what that would look like. I had some affirmations that really spoke to me, I guess. And just the normal setup, just making sure that you feel safe in your environment and all those comforting smells and stuff like that. So my midwife and I sort of worked through all of that, and I knew what my space was going to look like, and I really manifested that.
Amazing. And how were you feeling towards the end of your pregnancy? Was everything sort of looking good for your home birth? And then, take us through the end of your pregnancy and into your labor and birth story.
Yeah, so again, third trimester, I really enjoyed it. I was a bit bigger than last time and didn't really have the energy for my toddler, which I actually felt really guilty about, the mum guilts. And I was actually really nervous what was going to happen postpartum with that as well. I mean, your firstborn is your love, and when you're introducing another sibling, you know that that's a really wonderful thing for them, a gift for them, but you also sort of mourn that time that you're going to lose with them as well. So the part of saying goodbye during the labor, I was really nervous about that. But anyway, third trimester was good apart from the lack of energy. I was feeling good about everything. All the measurements were looking good. The home birth was on track. I was feeling more and more at peace with the whole thing the further I got along. I was just really all about it, fully into it. It was quite interesting when I talked to other people about what I had planned. Their reactions toward it was quite, a lot of people view home birth as not safe, which I mean, everyone should do their own research on it. I'm not gonna say you should one thing or another, but I think again, being in that safe environment, which in your home is for me, that was the best decision. So I was feeling really good about it. I actually kind of wanted to do a bit of an experiment on myself, so I didn't do any of the things to try to bring on labor. I just wanted to see what would happen if I didn't do anything. And so come 39 and 4, I woke up with some mild cramping and had to go to the poop room, which was a good sign. And my bloody show was there then. So I thought, we're all on. This is very exciting. So we just got up as a family and had breakfast and kind of mulled around for a bit. And then my sister came and picked up Albie to hang out for the day. And then Ben and I just got on to putting our space together, setting up the pool, the music, the candles, all that stuff. And we did that. And then I felt like my contractions, although they were still mild, I felt like they started spacing apart quite a bit. And so I was like, oh no, I hope this isn't going to fizzle out. It was quite a stormy day, but we still decided to go for a bushwalk just to get some fresh air. And that was really great, actually. And everything ramped up pretty quickly from there. I think we stopped probably 10 to 15 times on quite a short walk for contractions. And throughout those sort of earlier contractions, I had this affirmation which really resonated with me. And it was surrender. And for whatever reason, just thinking about that, I was really able just to kind of relax through. And then I could focus on the breathing. And so it was all like very manageable and going really well. And then we came home and I put on the TENS machine and was just rocking back and forth. And I think I was in established labour, like, by the time I got home. It was coming quite quick. And so my midwife arrived and she just hung out in the corner of the room. I don't even think I said hello to her. I was just in such a zone. I went really inward, which you never quite know exactly how you're going to go until you get to that space. But yeah, I went inward and the TENS machine was just rocking. I was just breathing and everything was so managed. I felt in control the whole time and I just knew exactly what was going on, where I was at. I got to a point where I said, I don't want to do this anymore. And in my head, I was like, haha, that was a funny joke. Like, I knew I wasn't in transition, but I obviously knew that things are like getting quite intense. I'm not really sure, but I didn't verbalize it. So it was just like this joke I had to myself. So anyway, after that, I tried to go to the toilet and I couldn't, but my mucus plug came out. And so I jumped into the pool and that was a really great relief. But quite quickly I had to go back onto my hands and knees. That was the only comfortable position for that labor. And yeah, the contractions intensified and then shifted quite quickly. So I remember then thinking in my head, I don't want to do this anymore, but I didn't verbalize it. And that was transition. And all of a sudden I felt Felix's head move down my birth canal. And I could feel my body pushing. And I was like, oh my God, this is the fetal ejection reflex that I've heard so much about. And because I didn't get to experience any of these sensations first time round, I was just so stoked, but also like trying to stay in control and breathe through it. So this next part happened, like the pushing part happened within 10 minutes, I think, just for a bit of time there. So anyway, I felt my body push, and my midwife must have heard that shift in my sound, because she came over and she was like, oh yep, like he's right there, do you want to put your fingers in and feel him? And I was like, okay. And she started coaching me through just a bit more of like a panting breath, and yeah, I breathed his head out, which sounds easy, but it's not. I always thought with the fetal ejection reflex that maybe it would be easier because you're not actively pushing, but it was still pretty hard. So I breathed his head out and then he did the restitution, which no one really talks about, but that is the most bizarre sensation, having the baby shift their body around like that. And then I had to actively do one push, and that was to get his shoulders out. Because he was quite big. And so he came out and I just instinctively put him on my chest and just sat there and took a breath, I guess. I was kind of in shock that that had all happened within 10 minutes. Like, it was so quick. And we just stayed in the pool for a bit and just really enjoyed the moment. And then probably about half an hour later, the midwife and the other midwife, because you've got to have two present at the home birth. They helped me out of the pool and got me set up on the couch so we could just have some really lovely snugs and get a bit dry and warm together. And I birthed the placenta there on the couch, which was actually quite hard after just giving birth. Like, the last thing you want to do is anything. So I had to work quite hard to push that out. It was quite a big placenta. So yeah, we just chilled on the couch for about an hour. Felix had his first feed, which was quite long and wonderful. And then they did some of the checks and Albie was 4.5 kgs, so quite large, and I just had a little graze and a really tiny first degree tear that didn't need a stitch. So
wow.
I was pretty stoked with that. That's a good result.
Shit, yeah.
So yeah, just what do we do after that? I think Susie helped me with a shower and getting dressed in my pajamas, and then within half an hour Albie came back and got to meet his little brother, which was such a cool moment. I can't remember what he came in saying, but he didn't even care that there was a baby there. He wanted to tell me about something cool that he had done with his auntie that day. But yeah, it was such a nice way to finish it all, being in your pajamas.
Yeah.
I think we even had like cake and tea and just a bit of a chat and debrief, and then they went on, the midwives went on their way, and we got to go upstairs and go to bed.
Yeah, amazing. And like at the time, did you reflect on like how different that experience had been to your first birth, or was it not until like a little bit later on once you got the chance to process what had happened?
No, I think it was almost instant. I couldn't believe how different the two experiences were. And if I was to like sum it up, my first labor and birth was painful. My second was intense and hard, but
yeah,
amazing. Like immediately after, I was like, that was incredible. I can't wait to tell every single person I know about that experience, because I just felt like a warrior.
Yeah.
It was so amazing. I'm still like in disbelief that it went as well as it did.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's so nice to hear. You know, like these contrasting stories. Maybe you didn't feel like amazing about your first birth, but you did about your second. It's so nice to hear.
Yeah. It's just, it's an incredible, birth is incredible.
Yeah.
I would probably do that 100 times over, but I'm not going to. We're a done family there.
Yeah.
But the recovery as well was amazing. Like I just felt like myself again immediately afterwards. All those varicose veins, all of that had just, everything had gone, and I just felt awesome.
Yeah, amazing. And how did you go like with the initial breastfeeding this time around with Felix?
It was pretty good, but for the first 2 weeks I had really sore nipples and spent a small fortune on buying all sorts of different gear to try and get that instant fix. But yeah, it took a while, and I think it's because I just immediately reverted back to how I would feed Albie at like 18 months old, as opposed to remembering that this is a new baby and we actually have to start from scratch.
Yeah,
so we did that, and then it's been good. Yeah it's going really well.
Yeah awesome. And how did you find like the initial juggle between having a newborn and you've got like a toddler, and that's obviously a huge shift for your family as well. So how did you find that?
Yeah, the first week was quite chill and easy. Ben was home, so he was doing all the daycare drop-offs and pickups. And yes, so the first week was bliss. We were just in this complete love bubble, just all enjoying each other's company. The energy was really great. it was really nice. But then week two, I got what I thought was a migraine. And it was like 10 out of 10 headaches, like super intense. And I think day four of that, I went to a GP to try and get some strong meds because nothing was helping. And they checked my blood pressure and it was through the roof. So they sent me straight to hospital, and the doctors did a bit of a, they checked over me and thought I was having like a brain bleed or a stroke. Like my hypertension was really bad. It was like 188 it was definitely at stroke or seizure levels. So everyone was kind of running around in a panic, and it was a really scary time actually, because I didn't know what was going on. I had Felix with me. And when they started saying words like that, like stroke and brain bleed. So quite quickly got me into some like CTs and MRIs, and I had the full works of checkups and things. And they diagnosed me with this thing called PRESS, which means, what does it mean? Posterior reversible encephalopathy syndrome. I'm probably not saying that right. Which is super rare, and most people have never heard of it, like doctors, midwives, people have just not heard of it. It's bizarre. But it's basically brain swelling, severe brain swelling that leads to like seizures and stuff. So it is sometimes linked to eclampsia. So even though I had no symptoms or anything, they think that I developed preeclampsia like day 10 postpartum. Not really sure why. There's a theory that there was excess hormones circulating in my body because of the placenta being large. It's just a theory, and no one really knows why or how I got this. So I'm still recovering from that. The recovery is a bit like a concussion where you can't be stimulated, so like no TV or reading or loud noises, stuff like that. So that kind of sent a bit of a flip on the recovery, and I actually ended up spending time in the hospital room that I was in with Albie. So I kind of went full circle with it. So I really had to call upon all of my support team to help throughout that period, because I was just a wreck. The fatigue was insane, and I literally couldn't do anything. So yeah, starting to come right now. They think it might be about a 3-month recovery, but again, it's just no one really knows why or how or what. So a good learning exercise in accepting help from people. I don't know what it is about. Is it a Kiwi thing? I'm not sure, but it is nice to accept the help and to work through it. So that's definitely made the juggle a bit harder. Albie has accepted being a big brother really well. Like, he's super wonderful to Felix, but we're noticing he's really sensitive to any changes, and so those big emotions are quite. So we just take it day by day.
It's hard, I think, for that sort of age has got generally big emotions anyway, right? So when you've got a change in your family, I think it's so normal, and so many people will relate to that sort of experience with a sibling, a bigger sibling, when you've got a newborn baby. But that's just really scary, your sort of postpartum experience, and it sounds like you're still having to take it easy, right? Like that's really scary.
Still taking it easy, but I'm seeing improvements though, so that's good. Awesome. But really unlucky. But that's just the way it is, so I've accepted that, and I'm just thankful that they were able to catch it when they did, and there's no brain damage, and so luckily this isn't a normal postpartum thing, but it is just amazing what us women go through and giving birth.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Heidi, for coming on the podcast and sharing your stories with us. I've really loved talking to you, and I know there'll be so many people who get a lot of value out of your birth experiences, so just super grateful that you're willing to share. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Jordan. It's a pleasure to be a part of that cycle of sharing experience, and if someone can get something out of it, then that's really great.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.